That doesn't exist. And anybody that tells you it exists, you should shake your head and run for the hills, because they're just trying to sell you something that sounds really important and really good. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore. We're back with Whiskey Wednesday. I'm back in the studio with my main man, Jake Sheehy.
I'm so glad you're back.
Hey, you guys, you and Jacob Payne, our acquisitions manager, you guys did a great job. I was listening on vacation. I'm like, man, I might retire.
Well, how was vacation? I mean, you guys went and had a good time, right? I mean, how was it?
Yeah, we had a great time. It was a lot of fun, relaxing, you know, hanging out with the family. It was kind of our annual birthday trip for the kids, which is always a fun time.
Yeah, I'm glad you had a good time, but I would like to see some more content, man. As a content manager, I want to see some videos. I want to see some photos. Plus, I know you're flying in well and in the front of the bus, and you're having a good time with the family beachfront. So tell me about it, man. Well, I mean, give me some details. You know, I want to see about it. Let me know.
The constant battle you and I have. I'm not the guy that walks around with my phone in my hand and trying to show off our trip to everybody, which I know that you would like to see a little bit more of that. Mm-hmm. I always kind of feel like when you live a certain lifestyle and you actually have it, you don't need to show it off. And, you know, I mean, it kind of, sometimes I think it creates a target on your back. People are like, hey, listen, it's like, I always make, you know, a little bit make fun of or cringe when I see the pictures of the Ferraris and the cool houses and the boats and everything else. Cause I'm like, if you really have that, you don't really show it off. Like there's not a reason to really kind of show that off unless you've only had it for about 5 minutes and it's kind of new to you.
Yeah. If you think it's going to be gone for a little bit, you want to remember it. So you'll take a photo of it, but you know, if you're used to it,
I like to just be present in the moment. And it's not about flexing and showing that stuff off. And I know that's as a content or content guy, you guys like to see a little bit more of that, but
I want to see it, but I mean, I understand why you don't do it.
Yeah. I like to just, my flex is not having to show that stuff off, I guess. Right. My flex is, hey, I want to just go live the lifestyle that we built and, be able to enjoy that time when we do take it and flex by showing other people how to live that lifestyle, but not flex by showing our lifestyle.
Yeah. Plus I feel like a lot of my members, they don't want to show that kind of stuff off anyway. They're not really like on the Instagram posting all their fun stuff.
They're kind of
more people we work with.
They're not doing it. They're not doing it to show off. Mm-hmm. They're doing it because they really want to live a certain way in a lifestyle. And they want to build something. And
you're right.
And that's kind of how we are. And so we try to do the same thing. I love it. We'll talk about our vacation, but you're not going to see me following around and walking through the
vlogging,
beach and, taking my seat on the plane and showing the cool things on where we're at on the plane and everything else. So
yeah, it makes sense. I get it.
Yeah. So today's episode, we're on the heels of Memorial Day. First of all, this is a good start to a lot of our listeners, a lot of your busy seasons, the peak season, right? You're rolling into kind of the unofficial start of summer is Memorial Day weekend.
Right.
And for everybody in the short-term rental world, that starts a lot of our peak seasons and a lot of our money-making season for the year. And so that's exciting, right?
Right.
So what do we have on the agenda?
Well, today I really want to dive into what's expected for people's property in the amenities. Mm. I think that's a big question I see a lot on the school platform, and we get sent in support@vodacy.com. If you have a question, send it in. And I want to know, like, what do people just expect when they're booking an Airbnb? And then what amenities and what things are going to help you get to the top? So we have a couple of categories here. We're going indoor, outdoor, seasonal, storage, kid-friendly, pet-friendly, rules and liability, cost. We're going to go through all of it. I want to go in-depth about amenities. Should we start out with indoor? Is that how you're feeling?
Yeah. Let me start off by saying amenities are and guest expectations. First and foremost, guest expectations are a very odd world in the short-term rental world when it comes to guest expectations.
Okay.
Think about the hotel world. When you go in hospitality and you book a Motel 6, you expect a certain deliverable, right? When you book the Four Seasons or the Ritz-Carlton or the St. Regis, you have another expectation and they're completely different based on how much money I'm paying. I mean, the guest knows there's different tiers in the hotel hospitality world, right? And what you're expecting as a guest. Short-term rentals are a little different.
Okay.
And it becomes difficult because the guest expectation is, I want the St. Regis Four Seasons experience regardless of how much I'm paying and whatever where I'm going, right? And
cool.
All so right. It can be a little bit different. So when you're talking about what guests are expecting, mm-hmm. what amenities to put in, and we'll dive into different amenities.
Right.
One, it is very market dependent. It is target audience dependent, mm-hmm. but you don't get the, you know, we don't have the luxury of saying, well, you only paid so much. And so we're only going to deliver so much. You really have to raise the bar across the board because the guest expects this five-star experience regardless of how much money they're paying. And it can be it can be a little bit difficult to navigate, but it is, as we go through the conversation of amenities today, I want people to look at it through the lens of who is my target audience and what kind of experience am I trying to provide and in what area and what are the kind of, when we dive into these different areas of the home, what are the expectations based on that area that I'm competing in, you know? And so we'll dive in and I'll give some more examples of that as we go through, but think about it from one, the guest expects a five-star experience regardless of how much they're paying.
Right.
Two, based on the area and your target audience, and the experience you're trying to provide, that's going to help dictate what amenities you need to focus on.
I love it. Okay, that's a great preface. Let's kind of dive in here then. Let's kind of narrow it down, because when I think amenities, I'm thinking like pots, pans, silverware, air fryer. In my opinion, I would guess those things are just expected.
Yeah,
the guests are just essentials. Essentials,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But then if you want to like level up the experience, I'm guessing here, when you go to like move to the bathroom, you're going to add in face masks, makeup remover for the women, dude wipes for the dude, stuff like that. Is that going to kind of help get that extra maybe star on the review? Is that going to help elevate the experience, you think?
So you're talking about kind of what are we providing when it comes to the essentials? When I think of amenities, I think about if we're in the kitchen and you're talking about, hey, I'm offering a fully stocked kitchen so people can stay here, they can eat here, they can cook whatever they want to do, and they've got everything they need, right?
Okay.
If I want to elevate the essentials, it's like, okay, how much am I providing extra paper goods? Am I providing extra, you know, like paper plates, you know, plastic cups, paper towels, like instead of just the bare minimum, do I have other stuff for them?
Spices
that are disposable. Yeah. Like spices, some of those things. If I want to add an amenity to a kitchen,
right,
I start thinking about coffee bars and espresso machines, things like that. Right?
Okay.
So I'm going to elevate the experience in the kitchen based on something like that. Something that not every property has. Every property probably has a Keurig and a coffee maker or, you know, some sort of way to make coffee in the morning. How much coffee am I actually providing? Am I providing one cup of coffee and then they have to go to the store to get the rest of it? Or am I elevating the experience by making sure they have more than what they need? Right. And so we're a fan of providing more than what they need and not skimping on some of the disposables or consumables that they're going to be using when they're at your property. And that goes for the bathrooms as well. So I'm a fan of oversupplying soaps, shampoos, in the kitchen, coffee, paper plates, paper towels, spices, whatever they need, any of the consumables or disposables, we provide more than they need, right? Okay. They're not going to run out on our watch is kind of what I think about.
That
elevates the customer experience. I don't know that that's really an amenity. That's saying, hey, listen, we're going to provide the essentials and we're going to make sure that anything you're consuming, you're not going to run out of. And then amenity wise, I think, how can I raise the bar? Is it, you know, is it the spa shower heads that have multiple, like, jets on that and they're, you know, the shower rain experience and all those different things. You can elevate the experience inside the shower. I can elevate the experience with an amenity like an actual Nespresso machine or an espresso thing, whatever the coffee, like whatever the fancy coffee. Yeah, I'm not a coffee connoisseur. So
gotcha.
I'm a guy that's like, give me a couple of Folgers coffee in the morning. I'm good to go. Right. But there are people who are
love that kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. And so that could elevate the experience based on your target audience. And so if I have an audience that would appreciate that, that might be an amenity in that room that I offer. If I want a spa like experience in the bathrooms, I might add extra amenities there to sell and really create a great experience when they're using for the user, the end user. Consumables, not necessarily an amenity, but a way to stand out and raise the bar on the experience, because there's a lot of people who provide, you know, a little teeny bar of soap for the whole week that you're there. They don't provide enough paper towels, enough paper plates. They don't, or any for that matter. Mm-hmm. Many times you show up and you have one roll of toilet paper and you're like, hey, listen, you're, you know, where are you, you know, go to the store if you need more. And so those things you need to oversupply, in my opinion.
Right.
It doesn't cost you that much extra to do. Almost, I don't even know that it costs you extra at all, because the goodwill you buy by having more than they need, people do appreciate.
100%. When I say to Airbnbs, I just expect there's going to be plates, there's going to be cups, there's going to be some, like you said, some kind of coffee maker. But man, like if I go to a place and there's spices, Ziploc bags, sharpened knives, cutting boards, like all these other, an air fryer, what was it? Like a margarita mixer, those like random things like that. I'm like, oh, okay, they're really umping up the bar here. So that's like a fun thing. Staying with the indoors now, what makes you decide whether or not you want to have, because I've seen properties where they have like a movie room. Mm-hmm. There's a game room with a pool table and stuff like that. How do you decide if you want to turn that extra room that you could make, it could be a bedroom, you could fit more guests there, but you're going to decide, actually, I'm going to turn that into a game room.
Right. Yeah. It's a good question. One, I would never, it almost never benefits you to take an actual bedroom and turn it into something else besides a bedroom. Right. Okay. However, you could have multiple living areas and people say, hey, listen, I've got two living rooms. I might decide to have one as a bunk room, or I have the option to turn it into a game room instead of a bunk room. Well, the bunk room, I sleep more people. And, you know, the old adage is heads and beds pay more money, right? You maximize the heads and beds. And so that extra living room in the house, if I change it into a bunk room, now all of a sudden, instead of sleeping eight people, I can sleep 12, right? Or whatever.
Right.
And so that is not always an easy decision based on who your target audience is and the experience. I don't ever typically take a bedroom and change it to anything but a bedroom. If it's an actual bedroom, a dedicated bedroom, you're almost never... It almost never benefits you to change that to something else.
Okay.
Other rooms, it does benefit you many times because you have to think about the customer experience. Let's say I have a three-bedroom house and it has a living room, a kitchen, and then I've got a downstairs or an upstairs loft living room, like an extra open space. I'm like, what do I do with that space?
With the loft.
Yeah. Okay. With the loft or a basement or something. Mm-hmm. And you say, do I change that to a game room, theater room, something else that elevates the experience in those three bedrooms? And I have that set up. Let's say I have it set up for two families and I got two king suites and I have one that's a bunk room with kids. And so I'm hosting eight people, right? Mm-hmm. Two in mom and dad's bedroom, two in mom and dad's bedroom, and then a double bunk that gives me four kids in there, right?
I'm with you.
So I've got eight people. Uh-huh. I have the option to say, hey, listen, I might want to put more bunks downstairs in that other room. And I jump that 8 to 12. I put two more double bunks down there. Mm-hmm. And now I've got eight more people or four more people in that property. Mm-hmm. But the kitchen's not big enough. And the other living room, now I took that living room and made it a bunk room. So now I only have one living room. And I have a small kitchen and it can't host 12 people. And mom and dad and the kids are all on top of each other in the one living room because I took the other extra living space and made it a bunk room.
Right.
That's a common thing that people do. And it actually detracts from the overall experience.
Right.
You're much better off hosting mom and dad, and then four kids or six kids. You can make a bunk room that hosts six people. You can cram kids into a room.
Yeah.
And ultimately have, you know, a game room or a kid's living room or something in that extra space, you know, kind of the mom and dad extra living room. So you have two spaces where kids and parents can go separately, but the same house.
Right.
And then you ultimately have enough space because you're not hosting that many, you're not hosting that many more people in the kitchen that you can eat together and you can dine together and everything else. And so the decisions a lot of times come down to this specific property, the layout of the specific property, who the target audience is, and if it's going to be for adults. Is it a three bedroom that you're hosting three couples of adults? Is it going to be a three bedroom that's going to be two families, like the example I just gave, and you're going to have kids and parents separate and or together, and you have to have separate spaces for them. And so creating the ideal experience is way more important than trying to maximize the number of people you can actually host.
Love it.
Right.
Love it.
So think about the target audience, who's going to be visiting there and how you can create the best experience for them in that house versus how can I cram as many people in here as possible? Because that doesn't always, it doesn't always maximize the guest experience.
Right. I love it. I guess the this question right here, I'm guessing you just pretty much answered it right here, but we talk about like game room, movie room, like fun rooms, but what about like office spaces?
Yeah.
I always think about it, but I guess that would just be based off your target audience, the niche, right? That's like,
if that's who you're going after, it's more of a leisure type property, business slash leisure. It's closer to a city where you know that people are going to be working and staying there. You know, and that is your target audience. An office workspace is going to be an important space to be set up in that property. Again, always revert back to who is my target audience, and you will always make more money by identifying a specific target audience. It doesn't mean you're not going to have crossover. I have people all the time. I say I have a property in our property in Georgia. It's set up for adults. It's got three king suites. It's set up with three king beds. There's nothing set up for kids. I target three couples, adult couples coming in from Atlanta. I know exactly where I want to target them, what they're going to be doing, and how they how they're going to use the property. That's how the property's set up. But I still have families with kids visit our property. That doesn't mean that I have to always target them. I think a lot of times people are like, oh man, I'm going to leave a lot of money on the table if I'm just not everything to everybody.
Right.
And so when you're deciding on the setup of these properties, you better have a very clear picture of who your target audience is. And that is going to set you up to make the most amount of money. Because then when you make the decisions on, do I want office space? Do I not want office space? Well, my property, I don't want any office space. They're coming to disconnect and unplug and rewind or unwind, not to work. But there are properties that there people are going to be there. And a big draw is, hey, listen, you can come and enjoy your time. You can work in a great spot. And we've got everything set up for you to connect and go get your work done during the day and then enjoy the property on, you know, at nights or whatever else. Right. So it depends on what experience you're trying to provide and who the target audience is. And that is going to be your guiding light, North Star for all these decisions. And there's not a one size fits all for any of them.
Yeah. I'm looking down the list here and I'm thinking, wow, that may just, I think that's going to be the probably overarching answers, answer. Right, pretty much for all of these. So, okay. So our next thing was outdoor. We have sauna, pool, cold plunge, outdoor fire, pizza, grill, bikes, kayaks, beach chairs, pool floats. I mean, once again, based on the market and your target audience, you're going to have some of those things. You're not going to have beach chairs, you know, the mountain ones, of course, but what about like the cold plunge and the sauna? That it depends on your thing. So do you have a personal favorite? If I have any of these, like when you're looking at a property, do you go, I really want the cold plunge and sauna?
Yeah, no.
Do you have one?
I don't. The number one searched amenity is a hot tub. People search hot tubs all the time.
Okay.
Does the property have a hot tub? So that is an amenity that we can actually track. Pool is an amenity that we can track. Does it actually make a difference in the market? Does it make more money to have that specific amenity? A lot of amenities you can't track. And so you have to think about, like you mentioned, cold plunges and saunas. Am I going after a wellness experience? If I was, I might have, you know, I might have an exercise room. I might have a yoga room. I might have the cold plunge, the sauna. Those things are going to be important amenities for me to consider and spaces to set up. If I'm not going after that, maybe I'm not going to spend the extra money on an expensive cold plunge, you know, because just to have it as a novelty, that doesn't really fit my target audience. If I'm going after family travelers with kids that aren't necessarily the fitness wellness crowd, they're probably not interested in a cold plunge,
right?
A hot tub in some markets is almost a necessity. If you go into certain markets, you know, like a mountain market that gets cold, especially ski markets, ski markets, it's almost a necessity to have it. It's not an extra. It's not a kind of, hey, you're going to make more money having it. You're just not going to make money. Your property's not going to get booked if you don't have it.
You get overlooked a little bit.
Yeah. So there are certain amenities in these markets when you're doing your analysis that are almost required amenities, pools in some markets. You know, if you don't have a pool, you're not going to compete in that market, right? And so there are certain amenities that it's really important when you're running the numbers and analyzing the market to recognize that is this important to have or is this not important to have? And then you go back to, okay, certain amenities, like those major ones, like a hot tub or a pool or something, in some markets, they're not a nice to have or they're not a revenue booster. They're going to be, you better have it or you're not going to make money.
Yeah, you're going to be able to play.
Yeah. In other markets, a hot tub, you have it and you know, only 30% of the market has it. Mm-hmm. It's a way to stand out, right? Mm-hmm. Because it is a searched amenity in a lot of areas. And so it's, it always comes down to three things. Running your numbers first and foremost, understanding the potential in your market, looking at the comparable properties in your market. What amenities do they have? What do they not have? Is there a common theme when it comes to amenities? Do they all have pools or hot tubs at the top of the market? Do they all have saunas at the top of the market? Do they all have game rooms at the top of the market, right? Mm-hmm. Figure out what is a very common theme at the top of the market and revenue wise, and then start to say, okay, I might need that in my market. Run the numbers to identify that.
Right.
And then the next thing is identifying a specific target audience and then making all your decisions to create an experience for them.
Right.
And the amenities fit into that experience. And so, so many people just want this magic button. Here's the amenity list that you should put in every property.
Right.
That doesn't exist. And anybody that tells you it exists, you should shake your head and run for the hills, because they're just trying to sell you something that sounds really important and really good.
Right.
There is not an end-all be-all amenity list for every market that's applicable to every market and or every target audience. They're all different. And you need to customize that experience based on your area and your target audience.
I love it. Okay, so how do you handle these things? We've gone over the amenities, the storage, or all that stuff, the market and the target audience. Let's give someone the tools about costs, liability, storage, kind of get into the numbers here a little bit. How do you even handle this? Who cleans it? If you have a pool in Joshua Tree,
right?
Who's going to be the guy that cleans the pool?
Yeah, you better hire a pool cleaner,
right?
You got a pool guy,
or hot tub guy, or like, do you do maintenance every six months, kind of thing, or how does that work?
So a lot of it, like your cleaners, you have your regular cleaners. Most cleaners are not going to be your pool cleaner,
right?
And they're not going to be the maintenance person on the pool or
right.
the hot tub or the sauna or whatever it else, right? They, you know, depending on your area and the cleaners, there are certain things like they're dealing with, you know, if it's indoors and it's the theater room or the game room, they're putting it back together and they're cleaning up, they're turning things off, putting things back in order. But when it comes to those major, bigger amenities like pools and hot tubs, you're probably, there's local service contractors in those areas that you hire. Like on ours, we have weekly maintenance and weekly check-ins on our most of our properties. One of my properties, we just drain the hot tub every single guest gets drained and refilled. It's not a big hot tub.
Okay.
It's a smaller hot tub, a little 4-person hot tub. Mm-hmm. Doesn't take a lot of time to drain and refill. Mm-hmm. And our cleaners just do it for us because there's really no maintenance, because every guest has a brand new fresh water, right? Yeah. Other hot tubs are bigger. They take a long time, or pools. You're not draining and refilling a pool. And so you have to have maintenance on it. And so we have weekly maintenance and making sure that pool's crystal clear and the hot tub's crystal clear and clean when a guest shows up.
Do you just leave that up to the property manager?
We will lean on the property manager for recommendations. Many times they're a great resource. Uh-huh. And so, but it's going to be separate from the property manager. It's going to be a separate private contractor that does it in all of the cases that we have it with. Some property managers in areas that every property has, you know, pools or hot tubs, they might already have in-house pool service that that's part of their deal. And so you just have to find out from them but they're a really good resource for who does it in those areas.
Okay. Say you got some kids, you have a property out in the desert and we're going to do the game room, the family room, and you got to have a pool. That's just the numbers. You have to have the pool, right?
Okay.
Now, how does it go with insurance and liability, that kind of thing? That's what I'm curious about with the kids. You know what I mean? How do you handle that?
Yeah. One, your first line of defense on any liabilities is the right insurance policy,
right?
We haven't talked about insurance for a while on the podcast. But it's a major decision for short-term rental investors to get short-term rental specific insurance. What that is going to also spell out is the things that they require to have at pools or hot tubs, or the things you're allowed to provide or not allowed to provide. They do not like, for example, the floaties and the pool
pool
toys that are not, lifeguard approved or whatever, where they're not actual approved flotation devices. They don't like that. So they'll see them in your pictures and be like, hey, you better take away those beach balls and stuff out of the pool. Mm-hmm. And so it's, if you want to be protected, one, you want to have an insurance carrier that is insuring your property as a short-term rental. They know that we have amenities. Those specific insurance providers, they know that we provide amenities. We're creating experiences. They're familiar with hot tubs and pools, and they have a checklist of saying, hey, listen, we need you to have these signs up. We need you to have this posted. We need to have this waiver signed.
Okay.
And so you're protecting your, you know, liability. What they do is they're a really good safety checklist as well for pool alarms and door alarms. So if kids leave a, you know, if a door opens and it goes out to a pool, there's alarms on the door. So the parents are notified, hey, the you know, kid is walking outside, right? They could be just sitting chit-chatting and they don't know. And so things that you might not recognize, what if I live in an area and I don't have a pool, I've never owned a pool, and I buy a property with a pool, and I don't reckon, or I don't realize there are door alarms or water alarms. When something falls into the pool, there's an alarm that goes off, and having those things in place are really nice. The insurance companies will say, hey, listen, here's the things you should have. And they're going to make sure that they're protecting themselves, but also protecting the guests on the safety side to say, hey, listen, this needs to be there. And so just don't just call your homeowner's insurance and get a policy and then go try to operate as a short-term rental. Pay a little bit more and get a short-term rental specific insurance policy.
Yeah.
They're going to help walk you through and navigate exactly how you set all this up, because they're the ones that are going to be on the hook if something goes wrong. Yeah. And so you can bet and make sure that they're going to make sure the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted.
Okay. Okay. That was going to be my next question. Like, where you post all the signage and stuff, but the insurance will help you with that process.
Yeah, they're going to help you post all that. We use Proper Insurance. I think that they're the gold standard when it comes to short-term rental insurance providers, but there's a whole bunch of them out there, and you should get some quotes. You should make sure you're, you know, you understand how you're protected and liability wise. And when it comes to some of these amenities, there, you know, there's some risk involved in providing them, and they're going to help you navigate that. And there are going to be some that they say, no, we're not going to do that. Right. We're not there are some insurance providers that don't allow you to have electric bikes, for example.
And interesting.
And so that's an amenity that you can leave for your guests and provide electric bikes. And there are some insurance carriers that say, hey, listen, we're okay with it, but here's how you have to operate it. There's other insurance carriers that say, better, you got to get that out of there. So make sure that you got the right insurance partner on that property. And then they will guide you through this, the process of how to set the property up with those amenities.
Okay. Okay, great. Now we're moving on to the cost. So this is a question right here. What numbers do you specifically look at to understand if these investments would be worth it in the long run?
Yeah, good. And so this comes down to knowing your numbers.
Okay.
And I always say very, very, very few people ever run the numbers accurately and then use those numbers to make good decisions on amenities, everything else. For example, every market has a revenue range. And if you want to know more about how to run the numbers, just a shameless plug, go to school.com, school with a K, SKOOL.com/STR DataSense. Okay. And you can get our underwriting process in there. So this is, when you're an investor, you have to understand the numbers. You have to understand what your revenue potential is. You have to understand how to accurately predict on that revenue range. In any market has a revenue range, and it's a wide range. And this is the problem. It's not, hey, listen, three bedrooms make anywhere from $45,000 to $50,000 in this market. It's not like that. It's hey, three bedrooms in this market make anywhere from $30,000 to $120,000. And you're like, okay, where in the heck do I land there?
It's a wide range.
I better understand where my range is.
Yeah.
I need to understand how to identify where a property is going to land in there. Mm-hmm. And then what I look at is saying, okay, let's say that range was true, the $30,000 to $120,000.
Okay.
And this property, I'm saying, you know, is operating right now, and it's going to operate in the $50,000 range.
Okay.
But all these other properties, same area, same location, same proximity, everything being equal, they're landing, there's some of them with pools or hot tubs that are landing in the $80,000 range, right? And I'm at 50 and I don't have a pool and a hot tub. And I say, okay, pool and a hot tub is an expensive thing to bite off on. I've got a $30,000 delta that I look like I'm leaving on the table. That's not going to put me at the very top of the market, let's say that in that case, but I'm toward the top of the market, $80,000 in gross revenue versus 50. Mm-hmm. That extra $30,000 a year as an investor, it's really nice to know that, because if I'm looking at it saying, hey, I need to invest $100,000 to put those two amenities in, is it worth it? Mm. And I say, okay, well, what's my return on that? Well, I'm getting an annual return of 30%. So I'm getting a full payback on my money just over 3 years. And, you know, if I was going to invest anywhere else, is there anywhere else you can put $100,000 and make 30% on that money? No.
Okay.
Or maybe there is, maybe there isn't, but in most cases, that's a pretty good return.
Right.
So I'm saying, okay, big decision to write a $100,000 check for those two big amenities. Right. And people always ask us, should I do this? And we just look at the numbers and say, how long is it going to take you to pay back? What is your return on that investment on that amenity? And those numbers are pretty, you know, I wouldn't say they're easy to run, but once you understand what you're looking at,
right,
it's easy to paint the picture of whether that makes sense. Now, on the flip side, let's say that pool and that hot tub was going to jump my revenue by 10 grand and it was going to cost me 100 grand. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to, it's a 10-year payback before I even make my money back. In 10 years, I'm probably having to redo something with that pool and the hot tub. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not nearly as attracted to that amenity and it giving me the lift that I need to give based on the cost of the amenity.
Right.
Because I'm looking at the numbers and saying, I'm only going to get 10% return on that. Maybe I'm okay with a 10% return, but that amenity, I'm not even getting my money back from that jump for 10 years.
10 years.
It's not that worth it, right?
Yeah.
I usually use a 5-year break even as my kind of my cutoff. And that's just me. It's like, hey, listen, if I get a 5-year payback, I'm getting 20% on my money by investing in that amenity. Mm-hmm. Many times you'll see these amenities pay you back within a year, year and a half.
Wow.
That's a pretty good investment. I mean, you pay back in a year, you've got 100% return on your money. Then every year after that, you're clipping away. So it comes down to first understanding the numbers.
Okay.
Like I said at the very beginning, you have to understand those numbers and then understand exactly what you're going to do with that target audience, that experience. How are these amenities going to be a part of that? Does the market, when I'm looking at the numbers and running the analysis and looking at all the comp sets and everything else, does it look like that amenity is going to give me a certain amount of lift, whatever that lift is identified on my underwriting sheet? Mm-hmm. Identify how much is it going to cost? How much of a lift am I going to get? Figure out what your return is, decide whether you do it.
Mm, okay. That makes total sense. I love it. Moving on to some other things now. Here's some extra questions I thought of. Is there a thing of offering too much stuff? What does that kind of look like?
Yeah, what it does.
If you have a hot tub, cold plunge, the sauna, and the pool, is it going to be too overwhelming?
Okay, but so in that case, I would say no. Maybe not, because what if I'm doing a wellness experience and it's going to be this place where they just kind of come in and it's all part of the same experience. I think where it gets to be too much is when you just it feels like you're throwing mud at the wall and the entire experience is not congruent. Like I have a cold plunge and then I've got a movie theater, and I've got the sauna and I've got, something else that is not health related, right? Yeah. Whatever, right? Yeah. Like I've got I've got a donut bar, and I've got the whatever. Okay. If you're having all of these things that you're just like, I'm just going to put this all in there.
Yeah.
And like, what if I have like all this kids stuff in there and I'm like, I need a pack and play and I need all these different little things so that somebody's not, having to pack all their kids stuff, but it's set up for an adult experience. It's incongruent. Right.
So
as long as everything's congruent and it adds to the overall experience for a specific audience, it's not like the property can support a lot of it. There's properties that have a lot of stuff and it's all very congruent to the experience. It works well. There are other properties that just feels like everywhere you turn around, they just started adding stuff.
Right.
And it doesn't, it just feels like you're trying to throw up on with whatever they want to use, they can use. And we went to the garage sale and found a lot of cool stuff. We're going to throw in the property.
Right.
Right.
That makes sense. Okay. Moving on. What's the best way to track guest use on the amenities? Is there even a way to do that? We bought the sauna, the barrel sauna, but we don't even know if it's really getting used that much. Is there even a way to kind of check that?
No, I don't know. We don't track it. I can't think of any way to really track it. The best way is probably, obviously your cleaners would know if something was used or not. Mm-hmm. The other thing are you getting reviews on it? Are people mentioning in the reviews? Right. Like there are things that that people like because it's mentioned in reviews all the time. We have this thing called an infinity game table that we put in a lot of properties. It's kind of it's this game console that people love. Mm-hmm. And we didn't know it was going to be such a huge hit, but we started seeing it showing up on review after review. And it doesn't matter what property you put it in, it shows up on the reviews. And so that's a good gauge that people like it and they're using it. Right.
Okay.
But it's, that's the biggest gauge for us is just kind of paying attention to if people are mentioning it or not.
Okay. Love it. Next one. Do you list all up front or do you keep some for a fun surprise?
We always try to keep some that we want to have them. We
a
want
fun
to have
surprise.
We want to have, we want to keep some, like we want them to, we want to have Easter eggs hidden throughout the property that they, when they show up, they're like, hey man, we love this property. Now you have to lead with your best stuff. You have to put your best foot forward. You need to, we need to attract guests to want to stay at our properties above and beyond everything else. You're not going to want to hide a pool, for example, right? You're not going But we do try to, we call them, we want to place Easter eggs throughout the property that add to the guest experience that they didn't know were there until they showed up.
Yeah. I love it. Okay. Okay. This is kind of a reverse, I guess, question I came up with. I think I came up with this this weekend. Here it is. I wrote, the noun of amenity is things that make life more pleasant or comfortable. So say I'm on a tight budget. Would a niche that would be a, that would be good is outdoor, living off the land, putting everything away, a couples themed where you have pretty much no amenities. You have nothing. Mm-hmm. Is that a good or bad idea? I don't, I can't really afford the barrel sauna, the pool, none of that stuff, but this is going to be my niche. I'm going to go tent style.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, what are you doing right now? You're leaning into a very specific experience, very like minimalist, like, hey, we're unplugging. We're not going to have all this crazy stuff. Those, that's an actual experience that people provide. There are properties that are online, you know, on Airbnb that do very, very well like that. I was actually just looking at a, an A-frame cabin and it is, I can't remember if it's in Wyoming or Montana. One of the mountain areas completely off the grid. They don't even have a toilet. They have an outhouse that's like, you have to bring in your own wood. You have to bring in your own water. There's nothing. And they lean into that experience and it does, it kills it. So the point is it's not, it, and this goes back to the very beginning of the conversation. It's not always about the amenities and adding more amenities. It's creating an experience, whether that's the amenities are can be part of the experience, but they don't have to be, right? And you're where you're saying, hey, listen, I can't really afford this, but you have to decide, is the off-grid living experience make sense in, you know, Naples, Florida? No, probably not. It's, you know, you have to have an area that that type of an experience makes sense and your property has to make sense for that. So if you're going to lean completely away from it and create that type of an experience, you better have a reason why, and it better be, you know, there better be, it better make sense for the area too. Does that make,
it like, makes total sense.
It's all about the experience is the whole point. It's totally not about the amenities.
Yeah. I love it. That was it, man. That's all the things I had. And we're at 37 minutes. We got to wrap this thing up. Oh, but that was amazing.
We better wrap up. All right.
That was amazing though. Okay.
So back in this, I was back, I've been off the seat for a minute.
So you came in, no problems. No problems. You came right in.
A little longer than normal. That's all right.
That's all right.
That's all right. Okay, guys, we'll wrap it up. You guys know where to find us. If you have any questions, we love you to send them into support@vodacy.com and make sure that we get those questions on an upcoming episode. Jake will make sure that we have it as one of our topics that we're talking about. If there's something that we haven't talked about for a while that you want to hear about, let us know for sure. If you got any value out of this show, we always appreciate you to share it. We know how valuable your time is. We hope you got value out of this time spent with us. But if you did, and you know somebody else who would, share the show. Those things help us. If you have more than 30 seconds, like it or review it on whatever podcast you're watching or listening on, whatever platform. And the final, most important thing that I haven't been able to say to you, I know you guys tried to say this and you forgot it. You messed it up.
Don't even get me started.
At the first one, but you remembered it really good. So I'm going to get, that's the only time that you brought Jacob back out of the thing. But the one thing I ask you guys, pick the one thing you can do today. Start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends.
Cheers.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey Grace, is there a website? Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit vodacy.com. Thanks for listening and we'll see you on the next episode.